Ask a VC by Ryan Floyd. Thoughts on venture capital and growing your SaaS startup.
Hey everyone, my name is Ryan Floyd. I'm a managing director at Storm Ventures. We're an early stage B2B focused venture fund. Welcome to the new episode of my podcast series, Ask a VC, where I give advice to you to help you grow your SaaS business, similar to what I'd be sharing with you if I was an investor or advisor on the board of your company. I originally recorded most of these episodes as videos, which you can see on my YouTube channel, Ask a VC. So as a result, please excuse any visual references in the podcast, though I don't think there are many. I hope you enjoy. Today, I wanted to invite a guest onto my show, someone I've known for a long time, who is a former CIO, to give you a perspective on how enterprise CIOs are thinking about this new environment. But before we get into that, I just want us to give a big shout out to everyone that's working on the front lines, not only the healthcare workers, but all the essential service workers, those folks at the Safeway, the pharmacy. Thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. If you have any thoughts or comments on this video or other videos or things you'd like me to talk maybe more about, please leave them. I read all of them. Share, subscribe, and most importantly, thank you for watching. Stay safe. All right, so welcome. I have with me today a very special guest, Tim Crawford. Tim is a well-respected CIO, and I met Tim probably 15 years ago, I think, when you were at Stanford. And he has since gone on to build a nice consulting practice and also has an awesome podcast called CIO in the Know. And you can find that on iTunes and Spotify or wherever you want to find your podcast. I wanted to have Tim on because I thought he could give all the SaaS executives and founders out there a little bit of perspective about how CIOs are thinking about this new post-pandemic or current pandemic world that we're in, and get into that a little bit with him. So Tim, great to have you on. Maybe we could just start by talking a little bit about like this role of the CIO, maybe why you did the CIO in the Know podcast, and just give all the viewers a sense for, you know, that role in today's enterprise.
Absolutely. Ryan, it's always great to see you and get a chance to chat. Whether it's private or public like this, and happy to share my perspective on the conversations that I'm privy to, which of late have been voluminous, to say the least. So as you mentioned, CIO in the Know is a podcast that I started last year, about a little more than a year ago, so 2019. And the whole impetus behind it was we as CIOs have been having a lot of private conversations over the years. And these are conversations that address a number of different things, but it's really uncomfortable to be able to talk about publicly when you start to tie that conversation to an individual. And so I really wanted to also provide a platform or forum for those CIOs that wanted to share their perspective, wanted to share some of those insights, some of those experiences that they've had. And so you got a chance to actually hear from a CIO firsthand their perspective on a myriad of different topics, you know, whether it's talking about SaaS and whether it's talking about emerging technology, fundamentals on CIOs and what keeps them up at night. There were episodes where we talked about what it means for a CIO to reach a board level position and starting to talk about how CIOs start to get on boards. So, I mean, it does vary from their career ascent through managing and leading and kind of what keeps them up at night and what they're challenged with. It's not just about technology. And I think that's one of the misnomers that people have about CIOs is it's all about technology. And I would say, sure, 15 years ago, it might have been 20 years ago, absolutely. Today, it's a business conversation. A CIO is a business leader first that happens to have responsibility for technology. I think we'll talk a little more about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's some, yeah, I mean, it's an important distinction because I think you're right. The think most people, when they think about a CIO, they think about an individual that's like, you know, I'm responsible for, you know, laptops, responsible for servers and just applications. And that was true maybe once upon a time, maybe with that role, you know, when it started. But today, you're right, it's really about how to, at least the way I see it, tell me if you think differently, it's about how to leverage technology to really drive business transformation.
And it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one piece that might help viewers kind of break this apart is understanding that there isn't just one type of CIO. And I've kind of broken it down by a number of different traits over the years. And so I have this concept of the traditional CIO and the transformational CIO. And so the traditional CIO is that tech-centric, and there are a number of traits that kind of follow behind that. But then there's also the transformational CIO that is much more business-focused, much more business-centric. And it's important for those folks that are trying to have conversations with CIOs to understand what type of CIO are you engaging with, because the language and what you focus on will vary greatly.
Right, right. And I should tell everybody, too, it's chief information officer, because I know in the finance world, there's sometimes CIOs or chief investment officers, but we are talking about CIOs in the enterprise world.
That's right.
So that's great, setting the stage. So I guess before we get into it, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm still trying to like get my head around all that has changed in the last just couple of months, although it seems like it's been much longer. You know, here I am in my, you know, in my dining room. This is my new office. You know, adjusting to life, you know, life at home. And I consider myself incredibly fortunate that I can work from home, and conduct, you know, most of my business as I could if I was in the office. How has your, like, give me some sense. I mean, how's your routine changed? Like, for example, one of the things I was thinking about for you is like, you used to spend a lot of time traveling. But, you know, tell me how has that changed for you?
Well, United keeps calling, but I'm not answering. you're absolutely right. You know, just to put it in perspective, I'm usually on the road every week somewhere. I live in Los Angeles. We have a beautiful home here in Los Angeles, but that's still be on the road every week. In fact, this year, before I stopped traveling, I was on the road every single week in 2020 before the stay-at-home kicked in. Wow. And my last airplane ride was during a week where I had three separate trips, just to put it in perspective. Three different trips, so out and back, out and back, out and back. Yeah, it's changed in terms of being able to come up and, for example, meet with you or see other folks or travel around the world, do different events and different meetings. That's definitely changed. But I would say that one thing that has made it better for me is now I can be in what would have been an event in San Francisco and then 2 hours later be in Austin for another event. So case in point, this week alone, we had the IBM Think Conference and what would have been the Dell Technologies World Conference. I was able to actually attend both of those, which would have been in two different cities, and I would have had to choose where I was or curtail one meeting, you know, a little bit to be able to travel and go to the next. So it has opened up new possibilities. The other thing is, quite frankly, travel is incredibly disruptive and it's incredibly inefficient. And because everyone is being forced to work from home, it's actually opening up new possibilities to engage with people via video. And so because of that, I can be on the phone in the morning with someone from India and then be on a video call with someone from India and then a couple hours later be on a video call with someone from Australia and then go to the East Coast and then be back on the West Coast and do that all within a 6-hour period. And that actually played out for me just about a week ago. Week or two ago. So that's something I couldn't have as easily done just because of travel schedules and having the flexibility. So I'm really trying to embrace the change. And at the same time, I, you know, have to add a little bit of humor in here because I'm an IT person and now have two teenage kids who are doing video conferencing for school all day. and I have a wife who's an executive with a firm, and she's on video all day. Guess who becomes IT support? So, in fact, I was on a call recently.
You're not qualified for that. You know,
I was on a call recently, and I'll make this quick. My daughter came in, and she said, I can't get on the network, and I only have 2 minutes before my next class. And so I'm like, I got to call you back. And so I had to go play IT support and get back. So awesome. You never know what you have to do.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It's good. You learn a lot of stuff. Well, I've been thinking about you because the travel, I just know, I mean, you're a road warrior. You are on the, like, as you said, you're on the road all the time. Obviously, that's impossible now. And I think you're right. It's interesting. There's been this kind of level set that's happened because obviously all the things you're talking about, you could have done it pre-COVID.
Yep.
But because everyone is at home, it's introducing all these kind of new ways of doing things that, you know, I think from a pure networking standpoint, it's not nearly as efficient. I mean, I'll speak for me personally. I'm really struggling staying connected with as many people as I typically am just because I'm not seeing people out and in gatherings, and it's not as easy to connect. But in many ways, there's a lot of efficiency at the same time to meetings. And, you know, I really don't have an excuse to be late to meetings anymore. You know, not that I ever did, but you know, there's not like there's commute or like I'm stuck in traffic,
right?
Or, you know, none of those typical, you know, your flight was late or something, right?
Flight was delayed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You got a 2 second commute.
But I think to that point, Ryan, it's also what you make of it too. So for me, I could say the same thing. You know, in the past pre-COVID, you know, someone said that now we can talk about BC and AD with different terms. BC is before COVID, AD is after disease, you know, so take your pick, okay. BC or AD.
All right.
But before the virus crisis, and I look at it in terms of virus crisis, economic crisis, and social impact, before the virus crisis, one of the things that I experienced is something similar to you. Unless I could get in front of people, it was really hard to stay connected with them. And I got to be honest, when we started to the stay at home and people were forced to have to be on video and doing video conferencing, I'm more connected with more people on a deeper level and on a personal level than I ever have been. And that's a huge shift, but it takes work on my part to stay connected. And if I let my foot off the gas or don't reach out and don't connect to those folks, then I could just easily see how that would just slough off too. Yeah. So it takes work. It takes a lot of work to do it.
Yeah, you're right. It's a shift. Like, you know, I have to be, I think, a little bit more cognizant and purposeful in what I'm doing, rather than going to an event and just, you know, by luck and happenstance running into you at a conference or something, you know. So,
well, and yeah. The other thing to think about is many of the vendors are now rethinking the whole event strategy. They do a lot of work that centers around events. It's not where I center my business or where my work centers, but one of the things that we're seeing right, left, and center is companies that are not just delaying events. I mean, Microsoft has said they're not going to have any event until 2021, which is pretty, you know, and you see some of the other big vendors that are saying the same thing, HPE, Dell, IBM, case in point. Salesforce just recently announced that they're not going to have Dreamforce. So now what they're starting to do is say, okay, if we don't have that event, so almost as a forcing function, if we don't have that event as a way to connect with folks, what can we do as a more creative way or a different way to engage with folks? And the reason why I bring this up is because I think it's really pushing people to finally think about not everything centers around an event. And I think there are better ways to make a stronger connection with those folks that you're trying to connect with.
Yeah, no, I it's a great perspective, and it's a good way to sort of look at it as like an opportunity rather than just it's a loss and, you know, and write it off. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how everybody sort of adjusts to the new reality. As it's uncertain whether, you know, in any foreseeable future we'll be having those large gatherings. It's as I sit here in my dining room, it's pretty hard to imagine, but you know, it always seems worse when you're in the midst of it.
Absolutely.
Well, so given. One of the things I definitely want to get your perspective on is, you know, you talk with CIOs all the time. It's sort of your world. You know that group of execs better than anyone. And given everything that's happened, how are they thinking about that business transformation now? What's kind of, you know, during this period, how are they thinking about their business? And I don't know, what can you tell folks about how they, you know, if you can generalize where people want to take business kind of going forward, given the impact? I mean, are things going to change? Are they thinking about it differently? Is it just a continuation of what they were doing? What's your perspective there?
Well, as you can probably imagine, it's all over the map, right? You're seeing folks that are still in that wait and see. And so they're just trying to tread water long enough to think that everything's going to come back automagically and be right back to where things were. I think that's probably the most dangerous of the situations to be in. Whereas you get the other extreme of folks that CIOs specifically that are thinking about, okay, how do we get people to work from home? Let's make sure that they've got a good webcam, they've got a good computer to use. Let's face it, there are still a lot of folks that are in the enterprise workspace, maybe not today, now that we're a couple months into this, but when this all started and stay at home took off, or rather closed us down, CIOs right, left, and center had to get their arms on a boatload of technology in a moment's notice. There were still a phenomenal number of enterprise users that did not have a laptop. And so they had to try and, you know, get people functional at home. Once they've gotten past that, the next step is, how do they start to kind of lead from a distance? And for those leaders that are, I would say, in a more mature state with their team, they actually have really succeeded in doing this. They're learning more about the people. They're able to connect with a lot of folks. Similar to my earlier example of going from India to Australia, to the East Coast, to the West Coast, they're doing the same thing. And they're actually able to have more conversations with their team because now everybody is available via video. But once you get past that, you have to think about a couple of things. You're heading out of the virus crisis and you're right into the economic crisis. And the economic crisis is really forcing companies to not just rethink their business from a worker standpoint, from an employee standpoint, like how many people are going to come back to work. If we have the A team and the B team, how exactly is that going to play out? It's not as simple as it sounds. You know, are you on the A team? Are you on the B team?
Right.
How are you going to rearrange your real estate? You know, there's a lot that has to be considered as part of this. And so people are rethinking their business.
I mean, one of the things that, you know, we've been spending a lot of time thinking through with our portfolio companies is, you know, this theme of how to play offense. You know, I think everyone's inclination when all this happened was to sort of, you know, curl up in the fetal position and, you know, just, you know, sort of put your head in the sand and, you know, fingers crossed it'll get better. But, you know, now I think, you know, the reality is here.
Yep.
We have to, I mean, it's been some very, very difficult, you know, discussions and work that's had to be done. But now the trick is trying to figure out how to play offense so that we can come out the other side of this stronger as a business and use this time that we have to, you know, just make the business stronger, make the product stronger. I mean, I'll just use that as an example. You know, a lot of our companies have really focused inward on the product, given that, you know, trying to accelerate sales today in many situations is challenging for very obvious reasons. What, in that context, what have you seen CIOs, how are they thinking about that, about trying to play offense and trying to, you know, set themselves up to be stronger when they come out the other side with the business?
Yeah, and let me address one thing that you said too, which is, you know, playing offense is important, I think, for any vendor, anyone that's selling into the IT organization or into the enterprise, regardless of what door you might come in, because not all doors start with the IT organization, let alone the CIO. If you're thinking about this just from a sales perspective, I think you're starting off with the wrong perspective. And even more so as we come out of the virus crisis and through the economic crisis, it's going to be less about the transaction and more about the relationship. And so I think it's important for those folks that are listening to this, yeah, go focus on the product, put your energy toward the product, But do not forget about your customer and the relationship you have with the customer. They may not be buying right now.
Yes.
But more so, for me, what I really valued was those folks that were interested in my issues and not just selling the next thing that they had on the boat or the next, you know, product that they were coming out with.
Yeah,
I mean, that's great. I'm not in the business to buy whatever you're selling. So let's be clear about this. But if you flip that around and focus on the relationship with your customer or prospect and say, look, Tim, we know you're in a hard spot right now. What can we do to help? What are the issues? What can we do to help? And that might mean we can introduce you to some people that we know. We don't care if it turns into any transactional value, but we know that's what's in your best interest. So let's focus on that right now. We're all in this together. Look, we're all in awkward situations right now from where we're working. Nobody intended to work from their dining room. I mean, come on, right? We have to respect the fact that we're all trying to do the best we can. And so if you start there and focus on the relationship, I guarantee you that will put you in a differentiated position once we come out of this, so that when it is time to talk about the transaction, that person on the other side of the desk or other side of the phone or other side of the email box will be much more apt to be willing to have that and willing to have that conversation. So focus on the product. I think that's a great place to put resources toward. Keep the foot on the pedal there. Don't let up. But on the other hand, you have to maintain those relationships. And even if the transactions aren't happening.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, relationships feel right now like they're more important than ever. And really focusing on that, I think that's sage advice.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so back to the question. So CIOs today, how are they thinking about, you know, this time? What are they, have they changed priorities? How are they generally thinking about things?
Yeah, I think it you could break it down into three pieces. One is just keeping people working from home. And that's still an ongoing challenge for many of these executives.
Yeah.
You know, their support teams were never designed to support someone remotely, but support the entire company remotely.
Right. Right. I mean, some of the connection isn't working. Or whatever, you know, yeah.
Right. I had a number of conversations with CIOs that have said, look, my team is trying to troubleshoot network issues on someone's home network. I mean, case in point, look at my situation. When I'm home and working remotely, usually it's just me or it's just my wife and I'm traveling. It's never all four of us, my wife and I and two kids, all on video conferencing all day long, taxing our home network. I mean, it's never seen that kind of demand.
Right.
Now, we're in a good position from a network perspective, thank goodness, but IT staff have to figure out how to do it. So the first thing is they still have to work toward keeping the employees going, keeping the organization going. The second piece is they have to think about what levers to start pulling because they're already being asked to shelve those experimental projects, shelve those projects that don't necessarily have very quick turnaround in terms of completion and investment. But then also, what levers can you pull in terms of cost cutting? Because like everyone else, with few exceptions, companies aren't seeing the same kind of revenue as they have had, right? We've kind of gone in, we've hit the pause button. And so it's not like 6 months from now or a year from now, automatically all of that is going to show up. It's going to take some time. And so they're trying to figure out what levers they can pull to kind of cut some of those costs. And CIOs are already being asked to make those cuts. So that's the second piece. The third piece is looking at what projects or efforts can they accelerate. So this is where things like cloud and AI and ML start to play a central role. Because what they're trying to do is figure out how can I address those cost-cutting issues, address those challenges that I have around value of projects, but also put my business in a better position so if I do get asked to cut, I have more flexibility to do so. And once we do come out of this, we're in a better position to be able to come out of this compared with our competition. So, for example, some of the hurdles around cloud. I mean, case in point, video conferencing. I mean, video conferencing, there are a number of companies that I've spoken with the CIO where they've said our culture was such that we needed people in the office. Our culture was people go to the office to work. It's really frowned upon if you want to work from home, if you need to work from home. You really need to be in the office. Well, guess what? This is the big experiment to show us that we can be productive working remotely, as seen over the last couple of months. It's taking time, right? And for some, you know, let's be honest, not everybody's as productive. But the point here is you have to think about what changes are happening within your organization and how you can position yourself to take advantage of that. Another example, cloud. There were a number of folks that were still fighting battles internally because folks were concerned about cloud. Oh, it's not secure. Does it have the same performance? Is it the right way to go? Well, what about these security risks, right? Guess what? All of those barriers.
Right. Right.
Now people are moving.
In fact, I mean, you know, well, we should talk about that third bucket, because I think for you know, SaaS founders, execs, that's going to be the place for them to focus in terms of building those relationships. And it is interesting with the cloud. I mean, to a large extent, you know, if you were not moving towards the cloud and you hadn't shifted resources to the cloud, it was a liability. It is a liability. And those that did move quickly 2, 3, 4 years ago and embraced that strategy, my guess is it's paying huge dividends today, at least with respect to business interruption.
Well, it is, because especially if they've moved their productivity tools.
Yeah.
So those folks that moved to 365 or Google Apps, they're in a great position right now, because now they don't have to backhaul that traffic through their VPN. I mean, let's face it, one of the key aspects that CIOs and IT teams are having to face as part of this work from home shift is their architectures were never designed to take on that many people being remote all at once.
Right.
And so VPNs were being taxed because some of them were even backhauling internet traffic to their corporate infrastructure and then sending it right back out to the internet. So moving to things like productivity tools online, you know, Zoom's a great example. Go to Zoom online or WebEx online or go to meeting online and be able to use collaboration tools externally versus internally. Or if you're doing, files and storage, you know, whether it's something like Box or OneDrive, again, you don't have to come through your corporate infrastructure. And so those tools are able to scale accordingly. You're right. If you had already moved to a cloud-based architecture and embraced it, I don't mean lift and shift. I mean, you moved to cloud and you embraced it. Yes, you are definitely in a better position. And that actually puts you in an even better position as you think about where you go from here and what levers you pull.
Thanks for listening. If you found it interesting, please subscribe. If you like it, make sure to share it with your friends. If you've got a suggestion for a topic for this podcast or even a video series, then tweet me. My handle's easy. It's Ryan Floyd, all one word. Or send me an email or even leave a comment on my YouTube channel. All right, until next time, thanks. Be safe.
Thank you for listening. Visit youtube.com/askavc for a video version of this podcast.